Hello, fellow runners. I'm Jeff Gaudette, chief running enthusiast for Runners Connect, a community of expert coaches dedicated to providing runners the motivation, answers, and training you need to achieve your goals. This is our interview series where runners, coaches, and proven experts come on our show to teach you what they've learned along the way so you can grab as much information as possible and apply it directly to improve your running right now. All of our previous episodes are available at runnersconnect.net, or you can subscribe to our iTunes feed to get updated as soon as we post new interviews. On today's show, we have Mark Cucuzella. Mark is a professor of family medicine at West Virginia University School of Medicine. Mark has been a competitive runner for 30 years, completing over 70 marathons and ultras, and continues to compete as a national levels master runner. His marathon best is 2:24, and he has run 2:44 in marathon 24 of the last 25 years. He won the 2011 Air Force Marathon in 2:38, a week shy of his 44th birthday. He attributes much of this longevity to good running form and minimalist principles. Mark is also the executive director of the National Running Center, an education portal and network of stores designed to teach healthier running and promoting more natural footwear. He hosts educational conferences in collaboration with the Running Clinic Canada and speaks nationally on topics related to running, health, and injury prevention. Mark also owns Two Rivers Treads, a center for natural running and walking in his hometown of Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Mark's innovative work and story has been featured in the New York Times, NPR, Outside Magazine, Running Times, Runner's World, Air Force Times, and the Washington Post, as well as other medical and media outlets. Mark is joining us on our show today to discuss barefoot and minimalist running and how you can safely make the transition. Without further ado, let's get started. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show. I appreciate you taking the time today to share your wisdom with us about minimalist running, and we're excited to learn from you today.
Well, thanks, Jeff. It's a privilege being on your show, and I've certainly enjoyed your posts on your website, meeting you up in Boston last year, you know, before the marathon.
Yeah, it was exciting. I wish the weather would have been a little bit better for you guys racing. That looked pretty brutal.
Well, I think, you know, for those of us with a job, it's a day off and it's fun. So I think if you take the right approach, you just make the best of it.
Exactly. So, you know, kind of going off that, let's give our audience, for those of you who don't know who you are, a little bit of background into your own running and training and kind of how you evolved into the minimalist movement a little bit. So how did you get started with the minimalist movement? You know, give us a little bit of a background about your running and training.
Yeah, so when I got started into this, Jeff, there probably wasn't the word minimalist. It certainly wasn't related to running shoes. I was about the year 2000, and probably like most of your audience out there, you know, had experienced, you know, a significant number of running injuries, and mine were significant. And in 2000, I had arthritis of my large toe joints and had no movement in those toes. It was causing all kinds of problems, and I had operative repairs of the toes and was kind of told at that time, you know, that running wasn't in my future and find something else to do. And you know, at that point, I kind of accepted that for a couple months, but, you know, I'm sure as many of your audience are, you know, they love running, you know, and it was something that just made the rest of my day work. You know, I was busy, and getting outside and just moving was something spiritual to me. So I had to learn it and had to relearn it, and I didn't accept that answer because I knew as a doc that a lot of what we kind of take as conventional wisdom is not necessarily true, not just related to running, but in my whole medical career, a lot of the paradigms that we were told, you know, when you really drill into it, it's like, well, maybe that's not true. So I didn't accept that as a truth. So I started to study running form, and this was really before people started attaching the footwear to it, Jeff. So I started looking really at how East Africans ran. You know, these guys ran better than any of us. And, you know, I'd lined up with a lot of them, and I wanted to figure out what they did. And they ran different. They ran in a kind of midfoot style and a more elastic style of running, and started to read about elasticity in running and spring mechanisms and things like that, which really as sprinters, I ran track in college, and you know, we just go run and then the sprinters do all these drills, and I really didn't have a clue what they were doing, but there was a science to that that the distance runners really didn't apply. You know, so long story short, I really understood running mechanics at that time and wanted to learn it and relearn how to run. So I started to apply a lot of the techniques of midfoot running, glute activation, some of the stuff the sprinters were doing, and felt good. Running didn't hurt. And I also applied a lot of the aerobic developments. I never learned anything about, you know, how you train. You know, we just went out and ran every day and, you know, if an easy day was maybe one step ahead of the guy you were running with, and we all thought that that was better. So I looked into the methods of Lydiard and Maffetone and had no intentions of racing again, but I was like, well, let me just learn this stuff because it all fits in. It's hard to hurt yourself while running easy when you get faster. You know, a lot of the stuff you post, I mean, you can actually get faster while running slow, but you know, it's like taking the red pill, you know.
Right. Not, it's tough to get people to believe that.
Yeah, but and then you go into the rabbit hole of discovery. So went down that pathway too, and because it all fits together. And it worked. 3 months after 3 months off of running, you know, of just doing this easy running and focusing on running form, I lined up at the Marine Corps Marathon as part of the Air Force team and ended up finishing third place. And I get 2:28 or something, and which wasn't my fastest time, but it was pretty wild because when I hit the finish line of that, I felt like I could run it again. It was completely different. I was using different energy systems. It was wild. And I was like, okay, well, this works. And started to get involved in footwear about probably 2005, 2006. I was running for Brooks Sports at the time, and you've had affiliations with Brooks, Jeff, and you know, all running shoe companies have little side projects that, you know, that they say, okay, what's coming, what's new, what's different, you know. So I was working on minimalist projects with Brooks, and really started to help with the design and testing and thought process of some stuff that now is kind of like coming back out again. You know, I mean, this was before Born to Run, before Lieberman's papers, and that really got me to understand just what being flat was all about and how that affected running. There was a designer there named Trip Allen who really understood it, taught me everything, and all I needed to do was put the shoes on and didn't need to read any more research papers because it felt good. You know, I was like, wow, this is how my body is designed to work. You know, flat on the ground, that's how we're made. Posture's normal. I can use the elasticity. And those projects didn't come to market. It was a tough time in any industry around 2008, 2009, economic crisis. So those projects got put on the table for a while, and then I saw that a new company, Newton Running, was coming out, and I knew nothing about their shoes, but their whole philosophy and website was about flat shoes and better running form. And I was like, okay, this isn't a side project for this company. This is what they're all about. They're all in. So from that time, started doing some similar stuff with Newton, really on the education side. It evolved from there because people learn this stuff really quick, Jeff. It, you know, it takes 5 minutes of teaching an intervention and they kind of get it. And if they're given some safe tools on how to progress, you know, that's it's not a difficult process. They get it really quick. And we started developing races here in West Virginia to build trails and gardens. My real medical interest is obesity and pediatric obesity. And we started to do runs to raise money for trails for schools. And those runs got large enough that we started to develop kind of a community of runners. And there was I'm in rural West Virginia. There's no running stores within 100 miles of here. So we got kind of cornered into starting a running store because I had a couple real passionate runners in my community who had been through this, who'd been transformed, and they're like, you know, Mark, we can open the store for you. Just do this, and we won't sell any flat shoes, and because we know we can do this. And none of these guys were doctors or physical therapists; they were just community runners, and they opened the store, and that was 2 years ago. And kind of the movement has taken off from there. You know, when we opened our store, Jeff, I think there were three lines. We had the Vibram was there, Newton, and Viva Barefoot. There were no, Saucony had just come out with a Kinvara, and now, gosh, you can't even count the number of, you know, flat, transitional, and minimal shoes. A long story. Sorry if that went on, but yeah, there's so many layers to what's happened in the last 2 years with this. We have the Natural Running Center now, which has about 12 partner stores with similar philosophy, but I'll let you lead from here. What other specific questions?
Yeah, no, that actually helps, you know, helps a lot. I mean, I think just hearing, you know, your background in terms of, you know, where you're coming from, that you, you know, really, this isn't really something that you started recently. You know, it's not something that you're just jumping on the bandwagon. And it's also not something that, or something that you can attest to personally in terms of, I mean, it's definitely pretty incredible story to the fact that, you know, you were at the point where, you know, you were considering that you may have to not run, or, you know, that people were telling you that you couldn't run. And then, you know, to be able to make such a simple transition, you know, to working on your form and moving into a more minimalist type of thought process, at least what didn't think of it at the time, but that that direction, you know, and to be able to kind of save your running. I mean, I definitely think it's a great story. And I know there's runners out there who are maybe experiencing the same thing or curious about, you know, how it can get them to be able to train more. So I'm glad you shared.
No, thank you. And, you know, it is I think what's good for runners now is that, you know, there's roadmaps out there now. And I think some of the early adapters of this, we've all kind of learned a ton along the way and we're continuing to learn. So what it used to probably take me an hour to try to explain to someone, I probably can do now in about 3 minutes. You know, certainly a lot of my colleagues who teach this, we've all really simplified the process a lot and we don't overthink it now. And I truly believe that, I mean, I think our store is a model of this because we don't sell elevated heeled cushion shoes, that anyone who wants to run or walk can get into a flat shoe. It's not like this special niche. It's like this is where we should all be. And we do a pre-assessment on everyone to see where they are in the spectrum. You know, are they green light, just go right into it and go run like a kid? They should never be put into a rigid supportive shoe. Or if it's someone who has a lot of dysfunction, no spring mechanism, and then we give them very specific, simple training tools so they can adapt the right way. And I've not had one person come back and say, you know, I think I really need to be back in the big bulky shoe. And that's the truth. They would find me and email me and say, I want my money back. You know, yeah, it hasn't happened. So,
well, that's definitely a good success story. So, you know, speaking of that movement and transition. So I guess maybe the way I'm seeing you speak about it, maybe there's two phases to, you know, kind of starting with the minimalist running. The first is kind of identifying where you're at on the spectrum. And then the second would be implementing a specific plan. So to start, you know, what can runners do in terms of being able to self-assess or, you know, figure out where they're at on the spectrum so they can figure out, you know, what their plan should be moving forward?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Jeff. And I think probably the best resource just to kind of look at and read. So Running Times, April of 2012, you know, I've probably learned all the technical side of this and the anatomy and biomechanics from Jay DeSherry, formerly a University of Virginia gait lab, and now just moved out to Bend, Oregon, and is starting a gait lab out there. But I've done a lot of work with Jay, and you know, he has done clinically and research-wise kind of what the article was called, Are You Ready for Minimalism? So really to look at running as a skill like any other sport, you have to have specific joint stability and specific mobility in the correct areas to be able to run efficiently. So we've drilled it down as a running tool. You don't want to give people 10 assessments and 10 corrections. You got to make it pretty simple. So, you know, we put into this article 3 stability tests and 3 mobility tests. And a lot of the stuff I've seen on your site, Jeff, so can you stand on one leg? Do you have adequate hip strength? Because you got to land on one leg 1,200 times a mile with 3 times your body weight, even if you run like a Kenyan. That's a non-negotiable. You need hip strength. You have to be in good posture. And you have to have control of your foot. You have to have a stable and controlled landing. You know, so most runners can take off just fine, but they don't know how to land. You know, learning how to land, you know, we all watch the Olympics. Look at how a gymnastics performer lands. You know, thousands and millions of landings, and they unconsciously can just land softly and correctly and use their whole mechanism. So we have 3 tests for stability. Can you stand on one foot? You know, shut your eyes. You know, do you have good posture? Simple test there. And can you actually activate the big toe to stabilize? And that's a specific muscle in the big toe called the flexor hallucis brevis. You know, that muscle is specific to foot stability, control, and very much to running because it differentiates us from other, you know, other primates and other bipedal animals that do not run. So that's simple. You can go to the website Running Times or Natural Running Center website under mobility and stability, and you can pull up the article and the video. Mobility, you know, we in a store, it's real simple. You can assess someone's ankle mobility. Do they have 30 degrees? Common complaint of people getting in flat shoes are, I get this discomfort in my Achilles, my calf. They're lengthening that area. So if you don't have proper mobility there, you've got to do some some corrections there, and it could take 8 to 10 weeks to get that mobility good, but identify it. Do you have mobility in your big toe? Plantar fasciitis is huge in people that go into minimalist shoes if they don't have plantar fascia mobility, because they're used to the shoe actually controlling that 4-foot rocker. You know, instead of the big toe bending to bring the arch back to stable, the shoe just rockers you forward, and that's called toe spring in a shoe. That's where it kind of ramps up from the 4-foot to the tip of the toe, and you see this angle there. So that's inhibiting your toe from bending. So if you take that away, I mean, they're just different. I'm not saying one's better than the other. It all depends on who you are. If you have no mobility in your plantar fascia, probably isn't a good idea to go run 10 miles in a 5-finger the first day. You'll be mobilizing tormenting tissue that hasn't been stretched in a long period of time. And then really, I think the big one, and you've hit on this in your site, if you don't have hip extension, you'll never be able to run efficiently, because you have to have hip extension. You know, running is a pendular motion. You know, you have to put your leg in front of you, but it's got to get behind you in an equal amount. And we sit all day, and I've never seen anyone, you know, and you've probably seen hundreds and hundreds of runners, videoed them all. I've never seen any runner have any trouble getting their foot out in front of them. They all have trouble getting their leg behind them, and that's hip extension. You know, so again, there's so many, and the beauty of all this is that all the corrections can be done while you're doing something else. Stand on 1 foot while you're typing your emails, you know, hanging out with the kids, you know, get into a position to stretch out your hip flexors, you know, just figure it out in your day, because no one has time to spend 2 hours, you know, getting specific therapies. You know, just develop your own tool. So that's kind of the quick assessment of kind of the chassis, so to speak. But I think that the other big rock in all of this is, okay, so you've got stability and mobility, but do you have a smart system? You know, for example, you know, the spring mechanism. And I think people are starting to talk about this in a different way than the researchers were 10 years ago, because everyone knows it's there. You know, running is elasticity. And, you know, for example, you know, my kids are 9 and 7, and they have a highly efficient spring mechanism. You know, you watch them, they can play, you know, jump rope, hopscotch. They jump off of things, they land, they spring, it's working. You know, my kids, you know, they only wear minimal shoes or barefoot, so they haven't inhibited that. But then you and I, Jeff, got to a point where we were runners, right? You need a running shoe. So you've got this, you know, I played ultimate frisbee like crazy when I was in high school, highly efficient spring. Now I'm a runner. Wear a supportive running shoe. So what's happening to my spring mechanism? It's getting smaller. Yeah, so you go through the progression. Well, then I get hurt, you know, and then what do they say? Wear a shoe with more support. So then what happens to my spring mechanism? Smaller. Yeah, then now I'm hurt again, so then what do they do? Orthotic. Yeah, motion control shoe. Then 2000, now, okay, well, okay, you can't run. Walk. What do you think happens to my spring mechanism? Gone. Yeah, then, you know, I'm a doc, so then we see all the people. So what's next stage? Knee arthritis, hip arthritis, can't walk, use a cane. I mean, no kidding, this is a, you know, not a, people don't consider these things running injuries, you know, these degenerative joints, but, you know, they're an everything injury, because the human body's designed to work in a certain way. As soon as you start to take the foot out of the equation and the Achilles and all that, you know, this isn't about running, it's just about health. And spring mechanism gone, and watch people walk down the street, and you know the people that have spring mechanism and those who don't. You see it smash into the ground when they're walking. Their knees and hips are just going to be, they're on borrowed time. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's, without any scientific papers, that's what happens. I think that's just what it is, you know. So retrain spring. So to go back to how do I assess someone? So if I, you know, no kidding, and I've seen people that can run a 30-minute 10K, have them do some box jumps, and they hit the ground like an elephant. You know, they're hurt and things, but because they don't know how to land. So we give people simple training tools, which are just simple springy exercises. You know, jump rope, do these real low-level box jumps. I'm not talking about going to the CrossFit gym and doing a box jump at thigh height. You have to do thousands and thousands of simple and easy ones until you master the movement pattern before you apply strength and power. You know, master the pattern first. I think we're speaking the same language, because I know you've posted similar things. You know, you got to do it correct first. Of course. Yeah. Take months to get to that higher box jump. You know, I'm still just springing around at low level, because that's, I think, all I need to do, then, because I'm well. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a great question, and one that there's clearly no exact answer, because everyone is different. I think the one area that I think we're all missing a lot is kind of that invisible training time. You know, so I don't know about you, if I get up early and if I can get an hour running, I'm pretty happy, but I'm on my feet the rest of the day. So if I'm on my feet the rest of the day and I'm in a horribly dysfunctional shoe that's elevating my foot and bracing it and not letting it do its normal thing, and then, well, I'm going to try to go run now. I think what you do, if you're trying to get your foot back to health, and this helps your running, obviously, but you're just trying to be a healthy person who won't need a knee replacement at age 60, is you get flat all day, and you get in a very minimal shoe all day walking, because it is very difficult to hurt yourself walking, and you will make all those adaptations in the tissue lengthening and a lot of strengthening just by walking in a very minimal shoe to work. And luckily now there's some shoes that you can actually get away with that look semi-corporate, that are like, you know, basically a five fingers with a closed toe box. And it's amazing, you know, and I didn't even understand any of that stuff until like 3 years ago. Viva Barefoot sent me one of their first samples of a shoe called the Lesotho, and which was like a work shoe. And it was like, I get it now, because like 2 weeks in that work shoe, I couldn't put anything else on my foot because I felt horrible, because I had energy. You know, my foot felt that it was like 3 millimeters of rubber between my foot and the ground. But, you know, I mean, I don't understand reflexology at a scientific level, but I got it because I felt good. I mean, my foot felt the ground. I felt at the end of the day, and my running felt better. I was like, this is more important than the running shoe. And so I think anyone who wants to be well should get, you know, you could wear your heels at the desk, but as soon as you get up and walk, there's nothing good going on in a piece of footwear that crumps your toes, elevates your heels, and puts your body at this horribly abnormal posture. You know, because what I see clinically when I assess people is, even when they get in a flat running shoe and you do the posture pull-down test, most folks are still in what we call that backseat position, because their body's default is a lumbar lordosis, which is kind of leaning back, because the body has to do that in a heel. It just has to, because any heel elevation is going to pitch you forward, and unless you want to fall on your face, you're going to go back, and that's a complete non-negotiable. That is just what it is, and that is true. It is impossible for a human to stand in a normal posture in an elevated heel. Running, walking, standing, you can't do it, because you're out of alignment. So anyone who wants to run better needs to get out of elevated heel corporate shoes, and then the rest starts to really take care of itself pretty quick. So now,
yeah, that's a great first step.
Back to what running shoe is for you. I mean, that again is all depends. Everyone has a different goal, Jeff. I mean, so what's your goal in running? Most people just want to go out for a run and not feel hurt and get some fitness in. Their goal is not to run barefoot. You know, there's a small segment whose aspiration in life is, I want to be a barefoot runner. I don't know too many of them. Do you?
Not really.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are some.
They're out there, but I don't know any.
And they're motivated, and they want to do that for whatever reason. And I do a ton of barefoot running. I love it because it's fun. It adds this other layer, but I don't think that that's for everybody. But most people just want to go run and feel good. So, you know, there's this whole area of transition shoes, which are a very safe place to put people to run. You know, a shoe like a Newton shoe is a safe shoe. It's flat, but it has protection. You know, Kinvara, you know, that type of shoe, which has some protection. Ultra, you know, is a really good shoe, but it has protection. You know, Merrell's coming out. So people have, you know, New Balance has the new 1010. So there's different shoes that are going to feel different, but they're not true barefoot style shoes. You know, they have some protection. And those are very safe places to put people, because everyone will throw me some anecdote or they'll have their opinion. Well, you know, I saw someone who put on a minimal shoe and they got hurt. So therefore, all minimal shoes are bad. You know, and I scratch my head. I'm like, well, pretty much every runner gets hurt anyway. So what's different? But again, you know, using my store as an experiment, because I learned from people. I mean, you can read the research, but real people is where it's at. You know, so I don't know how many hundreds and thousands of flat shoes we've sold out of our store, you know, easily a few thousand. You know, I have yet to have a customer come back and say, I am hurt and I think it's your shoes that did it. And because I think there's this fear factor in the running market and running retail is, well, if I try to go there and they get hurt, you know, then they're going to come back and blame me. And, you know, my manager or someone's going to get mad because I had this conversation. But we have not sold a single elevated heel shoe out of our store in over 2 years. And my inbox is not full of people wanting to return their shoes. So it can be done. And the education we give is very simple. You know, start slow, alternate your shoes. You know, if something's a little uncomfortable, that's okay. And I think this is important too, Jeff. So, you know, people need to read their bodies. And I think if we all understand some basic science of how the body's wired, you become your own intuitive coach. So what structures in our bodies feel pain? This is important. You know, so you go out and run. You've never run in a minimal shoe, and you go out and do a half mile in a Vibram, you know, which is totally different. You're going to wake up the next day, and you're going to be a little sore, you know. Is that bad or good? I had a neurologist send me this nice little video because they did this, and it really helped me understand it because I heard it from, you know, from a person who'd gone through this. And, you know, so he's a neurologist, you know, smart guy and understands how the body's wired and had running injuries. And, you know, I told him, you know, get in a flatter shoe and go real slow. So he sent me this video, and this was his story. He's like, yeah, did that. And the first day I wore those flat shoes, I felt a little sore. But right then I realized that that was good because muscle tendon units feel discomfort. And I was waking up muscle tendon units that needed to be woken up. And then he understood too, he says, well, because he sees all the same problems I do, all the arthritises and stuff, because everyone's got this stuff. He's like, joints don't feel pain. So that's a good thing I'm feeling some discomfort, because what I see clinically, you know, I had it in my foot. I had pretty much no toe joints left, and I didn't feel that. You know, knee arthritis, hip arthritis. So these runners are pounding into the ground every day. They're not feeling that pain, but the damage is happening. You know, Casey Kerrigan will share her research with you. She was at UVA, now has a shoe company because she was so passionate about this, called Oesch. And that's important because people will ask me, well, if I'm not hurt, should I get out of the heel chew and heel strike pattern? And my answer is yes. Get out of that, because you're still doing harm to yourself. You're not designed to move like that. Now, you may get away with it, but I see plenty of 50 and 60 year old runners who now have significant knee and hip arthritis, and that's different than plantar fasciosis. You can get rid of that. And then we, as you know, coaches and docs and running shoe warehouse people and stuff, you know, we say, well, that's not a running injury. You know, that's just, you know, I mean, shit happens. You know, it's that you get arthritis. And that's not true, because unshod societies, they don't even know what knee and hip arthritis is. They don't know what back pain is. So these are the layers of kind of invisible injuries that the whole minimalist movement, I think the people that understand it, that's really the heart of it, is let's get people moving in the way they're designed to move, so they're not ex-runners, you know, and for their health, they really need to be out moving. It's a long answer to kind of a simple question, but it's not a simple place to go.
No, it's not. And that's what makes it so difficult when people ask questions about it. You know, especially when they shoot you an email, and it's difficult because it's like, well, I need to know all this information about you and what your plans are. And, but I appreciate, but you did a great job in terms of not necessarily generalizing it, but explaining the real scientific background to, you know, to what's going on and you know, what's really the mechanism behind it. And I think that will really help people better understand, you know, what their progress needs to be on an individual level. So I think that was a great answer. Just to follow up on something real quick, you know, you mentioned, you know, a great place to start for people is, you know, a shoe that offers some protection. How do you feel about the shoes that are kind of like the 3mm heel drop that are kind of, I guess, marketed as those transition shoes? I think Brooks makes like the Pure line of shoes are usually like a 3mm drop. Do you consider those to be a transition shoe, or do you think people should, you know, generally go to a 0mm if they can?
I think it depends on, again, where you are in that pre-assessment. So, you know, I think if you're a 10-year-old and you've got plenty of mobility everywhere, go to zero and never leave there. Really, whether it's four or zero is, I think the only people that really notice a difference between four and zero are people that are like the true barefoot runners. They put any elevation on and they can sense it. But anyone coming out at 12, 14 millimeters, you know, going to four is a, or whatever, is a great first place to go, as long as they are working on form. Because, and this is probably the most important part of this, because you can put on, you know, say you put on a Brooks Pure and it's flat, you know, it's got a lot of soft EVA foam, you can still smash into the ground just fine in your heel in that shoe. That is not going to make you a better runner. So everyone who's trying to learn this should do some work. You know, and I believe everyone should go out and do some little bits of barefoot running, you know, 200 meters, because you'll start to develop a proper movement pattern just by learning how to do that. You know, our website, we've put out a couple videos that show, you know, some drills and show the movement, because you got to learn the movement and then go put a shoe on. You know, and the shoe's going to give you protection to whatever terrain, texture of road. You know, can you control your foot? If you can't control your foot motion, you need some shoe to help you out, you know, at least until you develop that through drills and specific exercises. So it's all good if it's keeping someone, you know, in a progression of strengthening their kinetic chain. So getting out of the elevation, I think, is the first step. Now, one property of shoes I think is real important that I think most people really don't get is they're just talking about the drop of a shoe and the amount of stack height is probably the term, how much between the, you know, the ground and your foot. Is soft is not a good property of a shoe. You know, when you put a shoe on and you walk around and it's nice and soft, and most of the time that's like, yeah, that feels good, that feels nice and cushiony. And, you know, it's like most things we're kind of learning about everything. You know, the opposite is true of everything, you know, you've been taught. So, I mean, think about how you land. If you land on an extremely soft, soft, soft surface, your foot proprioception is how you balance yourself. It's the fastest way we balance ourselves. Most people are visually dominant because we have all this cushion and foam between our foot and the ground, is that you rely on your eyes to stabilize yourself. But proprioception is much faster. So if you run in a marshmallow and you hit the ground, your brain doesn't have the signal that it's on the ground, and your core has to stabilize really quick to get off the ground. You know, you got to apply three times your body weight. Stance is about 0.12 to 0.15 seconds. You're not feeling the ground. There's this delay. You're going to apply force to the ground, and you're going to be all over the place. So firm midsole is good. Now, having some protection for most people feels better than being completely barefoot for a longer run if they don't want to reduce their mileage. You know, so probably the firmer shoes out there, so, you know, for example, the Newton shoe has a TPU top plate. It's not EVA foam. You know, so I'm an advocate of that type of material because your foot will sense the ground better than soft. And the durability is better because if you just, you know, land and hit real hard on the EVA foam, a couple hundred miles, it's losing its properties at the area that you actually need it most. So say you're a, you know, 4-foot pronation. You know, you're going to have pronation, you know, when your heel is off the ground, and that's actually when pronation occurs most, is in the forefoot area. And you're a forefoot pronator. So a couple hundred miles, you're starting to divot that inside, you know, the big toe side of that shoe. So now you're starting to develop kind of an offset, and the shoe's going to start to deform where you need it to protect you most. So everyone, you know, and I know, I think you've posted some stuff about shoe wear, because it all depends too. It's like a tire, you know. If you're running real efficient, you're going to get a lot more miles out of any shoe. If you're running real inefficient, really unaligned, you know, I've seen people trash shoes at 50 miles, you know, in the same shoe someone else could go 1,000 miles in. But yeah, so really soft is not a good idea in running shoes. So you want a firmer material between your foot and the ground. It's like the gym mats. You know, they're not mushy, mushy, mushy soft. They have some compliance to them, but the foot needs to feel the surface so the kinetic chain can activate and stabilize the landing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Speaking of that point in terms of running, you know, shoes running out of wear, one of the questions that I get a lot, and I actually don't know the answer to, is, you know, is there a general idea of when you should replace minimalist shoes? You know, is it based on, you know, kind of what you're wearing them like in terms of, you know, your foot strike? Or is there, do they need to be replaced quite as often because they're usually not going to have as much, you know, support and padding for the most part?
Gosh, that's a great question. Again, it all comes down to, it depends. So the pure barefoot style shoes, you know, the ones that have no EVA, you know, you would never need to replace them until you've, you know, they've fallen off your foot, because there's, and I think you'll see a lot of people, even with the, you know, with the shoes that are, so I kind of put shoes in three categories, you know, kind of transition shoes, shoes that have protection but are flat, wide toe box, you know, has the properties of a minimalist shoe. Shoes I'd category as minimalist, that would be like a New Balance MT-10 Trail. You know, it's got some protection to it. Now, a lot of people find that after they've run, you know, 200-300 miles in that shoe, that actually they like it better. They've compressed the EVA. You know, at the same time, they've strengthened things. So, you know, people can put, you know, hundreds, if not, you know, I've had people with a Newton shoe, for example, myself included, you know, a couple thousand miles. And we tested a pair at 1,000 miles out at the UVA Gate Lab, and it had no decreased properties because it was not EVA foam. You know, and I was running pretty efficiently in the shoe, so it was, you know, I didn't have, like, the outside was worn out at a 45-degree angle. You know, it's hitting pretty flat every time. But, yeah, so they do not lose their properties in the same way as someone running in a very soft shoe with a bad form, because then they're going to heel load and forefoot load. You know, what hits the ground's got to come off the ground. So they tend to put a lot more, heel hitter puts actually more pressure in the forefoot than the heel, because, you know, equal and opposite reactions, they lose all of their motion. You know, it's like try skipping or jumping rope and then landing on your heel. You basically, you've lost everything. You have no storage of energy. Now you've got to push off to get off the ground again versus storing and releasing energy. So the EVA, the more EVA, the sooner the shoe's going to wear out, you know, and the less EVA, you know, I haven't seen, you know, my Achilles hasn't worn out yet, and I don't think it ever will. So, I mean, your body's designed to take the load. The more it's transferred to that.
No, that's interesting. That was definitely my theory, but I wasn't sure, and I was like, you know, this is definitely a question I need to ask Mark about, because, you know, I want to be able to give people the right answer. So I'm glad you had a good answer.
A pair of one of the first Evos, you know, the first Terra Plana Evos, is like 3 years old, and it's beautiful. It's still like just as it was. You know, it's a Kevlar sole, so the sole hasn't worn through, and the upper's a little ratty. It's got some tears, but it's the same exact thing that I wore like 3 years ago when it first came out. Doesn't feel a bit different.
That's pretty awesome.
It's actually grown because it's gotten thicker, so it's actually, you know, gone up. So it's a little tight when it used to be really loose. And that's another kind of funny thing about all this is, you know, you start to, it's like a lumberjack's hand. The more you start to strengthen your foot, you can't fit in normal shoes anymore because they're all cut, like all, you know, normal width shoes in America are really, normal is withered foot. So all these people that are figuring out this minimalism, they can't buy anything but, you know, they can be skinny guys and skinny gals, and they need wide shoes. It is, yeah. They come in and they're like, they can't fit. Like, the women go to the men's because it's a wider last, and the men need the ease.
That's pretty funny. I actually didn't realize that was a result of it, but it makes sense. I mean, you know, your foot's getting stretched out and it's getting stronger and
thicker. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. Going back to something, I wrote down a note here about runners who, you know, sometimes I'll see runners out when I'm on the trail or whatever, and I'll see them in minimalist shoes, and they're definitely heel striking. So for those types of runners, you know, that are still heel striking when they're running minimalist, your suggestion to them would be to do some drills and exercises in order to relearn or practice or learn maybe for the first time the correct movement patterns and landing patterns?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people actually need to see someone to kind of do an assessment. So they could look at the running times video we did. So there's stuff that's kind of hardware and software. So if you have someone that just is not cueing the right movement pattern, say they're lifting versus pushing, you know, they're, you know, doing the high knee lifting and putting their foot out in front of them because they're just trying to kind of kiss the ground or something, and that's not efficient, versus someone who's using more of the posterior chain and the glutes, you know, that's just a quick fix by telling them, okay, just push, not lift. But someone who has no hip extension, say they've got really tight rectus femoris, iliacus, psoas, and they just can't get their leg behind them, they could cue the right things, but they just can't do it. So does that make sense? There's something can be fixed just by do that?
And other that makes sense. I've always been curious. So
yeah, so that's where, you know, it takes 8 to 10 weeks. So say your Achilles area is really tight, and that's inhibiting you from loading in the correct way. You know, it needs to be identified and then given correction. So you have to kind of come at it both ways. So that's why I'm not a big fan of, like, armchair video analysis, because I will refuse to look at someone's video and say why they're doing it, because I have no clue. You know, I may be able to see what they're doing, but why they're doing it, you know, I'd probably cause more harm than good just over a YouTube video or something, trying to make some judgment of that. So, I mean, like, the video we put out kind of explains, it's on the Natural Running Center, explains a lot about what these proper movement patterns are, and then someone who's, you know, pretty intuitive can kind of watch that a couple times and go out and kind of play with things themselves. But, you know, taking the shoes off is a really good first step, just to try to learn how to land softer, you know, shorten your stride. You know, before you're going to try to apply a lot of power, land softer, shorten your stride, land with your foot closer to underneath you. You know, running's like a pogo stick motion. You know, you think of a pogo stick, if you throw it out in front of you, it's going to come right back in at you. You have to apply the force in the right vector, you know, so it's got to kind of go behind you at a nice angle, and that's hip extension and glute strength. You know, throw it behind you, it's going to pop forward. Throw it straight down to the ground because you have no hip extension, you're going to pop right up. And we see a lot of runners with a ton of vertical motion who are developing workarounds, but watch the Kenyan and they're just like kangaroos, but then watch what's going on in their hip region, and then you'll see, you'll understand why they're doing that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, you can definitely see the movement patterns very, very good when you, especially when you watch the East Africans running. It's, you know, you can see the power coming from the hip. It's if you don't know what we mean by it, for anybody in the audience that's listening, if you don't know what we mean by that, check out a YouTube video of, you know, maybe the Olympic 10K or Olympic 5K and watch the Kenyans and the Ethiopians and watch their hip drive. It's pretty incredible just to see the power that they're getting. And you know, that's not something that's unique to them. I mean, if you develop the strength, that's something that you can, you know, you can do as well in terms of running with your form.
What's curious, Jeff, is you look at how sprinters have trained for years and years and years, and football players, any sport that involves speed, they're doing tons of drills, you know, with sleds and pulling things to activate the glutes. You know, they're doing A skips properly. You know, most runners who do skips, they do them wrong. You know, they do the high knee thing versus push. You watch a sprinter do a skip, it's a totally different thing. And then distance runners, we've kind of ignored all that for some reason. We just go run. But all the stuff, that none of this is new. This stuff has been done. You know, sprinters spend at least half of their time working on technique. At least. Yeah. And then the rest is, you know, specific strength. but it's all about the booty is what it is.
It's very true. It is very true. It's amazing how much the glute and glute activation is important in the running mechanics. It's really, really a powerful muscle. So I know I probably know the answer to this question, but I definitely get it a lot. I'm sure you do too. Is there some type of plan or that you guys, especially with the Natural Running Center, maybe send out or give to people who are, you know, want to transition to the minimalist movement in terms of how much of their mileage that they should be running on a daily basis as they build up, you know, week to week, month to month? Is there some type of template or pattern that you have, or is it very individual the way that that you look at it?
Yeah, we have on our website, naturalrunningcenter.com, we have a tab called Transition Zone, and it has a number of articles, but I don't feel, I mean, people can apply, you know, a 10% rule, but I don't think giving a specific prescription is the right way to go. I think if everyone understands, you know, where they are and what they're trying to do and listen to their body, I think what's important for people to understand is fascia recovery, because running is a fascia activity, meaning the fascia is like Achilles, plantar fascia, it's collagen. So when you're making these transitions, you're putting a different stress on the collagen matrix. And if you look at how collagen recovers, and you know, you think of how runners have trained through time, and they all did this without knowing the science, but no one through the history of distance running could run really, really hard with powerful workouts every day. They all knew that they needed to take one or two ridiculously easy days the harder they ran, because it takes fascia 48 to 72 hours to recover. You know, so you go apply a load to any tissue that's a little above what kind of your normal threshold is. You know, that's a training effect. Apply just enough stress above your capacity, just a little bit more, and then 48 to 72 hours, you'll supercompensate. That's getting better. So when you're going into minimalist shoes or doing anything with your training, you know, you can't fool that rule. You know, so you apply, just like my friend who said his, you know, everything was a little bit sore after just a half mile in the flat shoes the first time they wore them. And it's like, that's a good thing. So you're not going to go out the next day and kind of repeat. My recommendation is really go, you know, into the new shoes every 48 hours. You know, go back to your other shoes and increase it a little bit as your body senses, you know. So it could be 200 meters the first day out if you're really tight everywhere. But if you're a kid, I mean, I didn't follow any of these rules because there were no rules. So I was working with Brooks on the minimalist projects, you know, I don't know, 2007-ish, 2006. And they sent me some Brooks Burns, which was a really nice shoe, leveled, you know, basically hacksawed out to be zero drop. And, you know, sent a couple pairs. I just go run in these. And I didn't alter my training. I just went out and ran in them. And immediately it was like, wow, that feels great. You know, never put on a heel again after that, you know, first day, because I'd done a lot of the form work, and now I finally had a shoe that was like, now the form work like worked better. And you'll hear that from a lot of people that are already doing a lot of good form stuff, as they finally get in a flat shoe and it's like, wow, I'm good. You know, this is just fine. You know, stay there and never go back. But I always, like, out of our store, certainly, you know, first thing we want to do is do no harm. So being conservative with anything is good, because I know most runners are type A. So if I can make it real clear to them to be cautious, maybe some of them will listen. But I know they all get the exuberance syndrome, you know, the Vibram exuberance syndrome, barefoot exuberance syndrome, because they start to feel real good. But their tissues, you know, metabolically they're fit, but their specific tissues haven't adapted yet. But they feel way efficient, and all it takes is one little tissue you stress over the edge and you can cause injury.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I think listening to your bodies is really, I think that's a fantastic piece of advice. And so for everybody out there who's, you know, definitely looking to transition, you know, forget about the templated type plans and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and really listen to your body. And that makes a lot of sense. So
before we get to our last question with Mark, I want to take 1 minute to do a quick plug for our new product, Strength Training for Runners. If you're listening to this interview up to this point, and if you listened to some of our other interviews in the past, you're definitely interested in learning how to make yourself a better runner. You've listened to Mark several times now talk about how learning to run stronger and engage the right muscles was a transformative point in his running career, and how he took that step to learn and make the changes. That's my goal with Runners Connect in general, and our new Strength Training for Runners product. If you want to learn how to make yourself that stronger, more efficient, and less injury-prone runner, and you're ready to make that commitment to yourself and your running, I urge you to check out runnersstrengthtraining.com. We've asked every expert we could find, spent months performing research, and used the collective experience of the Runners Connect staff to put together 18 specific strength routines for runners that will help you run stronger, stay injury-free, and make the transition to minimalist running if that's your goal. More importantly, we have specific prescriptions for how to include strength training for your every race distance from 5K to the marathon, general fitness, weight loss, beginners, and more. We'll tell you exactly which days to strength train and what routines to include. If you're ready to take the next step and act on some of the great lessons you've learned in our interviews, now is the time. Visit runnersstrengthtraining.com.
Moving on to our last question, what's one of the most common mistakes that you've seen runners make, when they're transitioning to the minimalist movement and running barefoot?
I mean, you've probably seen it too, Jeff. Just too hard, too much, too soon, too fast.
I figured that's what you would say, but yeah. I didn't know if there was going to be something that came up.
Apply to barefoot or minimal shoes. I mean, that's just why people get hurt. All this goes back to, Arthur Lydiard. He said, train, don't strain. That was all over Bill Bowerman's book, as Bill Bowerman's jogging book was basically, a rehash of everything he learned from Arthur Lydiard in New Zealand when he was training the cardiac patients. So train, don't strain. And it's on every page if, everyone just picked up that 1967 Bill Bowerman jogging book. I think you could probably throw a lot of stuff away because now this is all like new age stuff. Yeah, because that's what he said. It's come full circle. And, my mantra is, every run I finish, I should, it's a proper training effect as if I feel like I could turn around and do it again. And that's the truth. It really is, other than maybe a couple times a year, I'll most unhealthy days of the year, probably, you were out there watching the Boston Marathon. So the couple days you race a marathon, if you're a runner, are the most unhealthy days of the year for you. That is not healthy activity. And the body's not designed to do that. We all do it to get on the monkey bars and have some fun, but no kidding, that is not. And we're seeing that now with some of the literature showing, people doing all this high-end endurance sport are dying sooner. And that's true because that's out of the healthy window. That's going the opposite. Too much stress, die. No stress, die. So be somewhere happy in the middle. And that goes for minimalist running, non-minimalist running, any activity you do, just train, don't strain. Feel like you could turn around and do it again. And then you had a good day.
Yeah, that's a fantastic piece of advice. I think it's great. So
fartlek, when you feel like you want to run fast, speed up. Feel like you want to run slower, slow down.
That is definitely the ultimate listen to your body training schedule. It's that's definitely the way to go.
Life is a fartlek when you get in your 40s.
I like it. Well, Mark, I appreciate you taking the time to empty out your brain and give us some knowledge. I mean, this was an awesome interview. I learned a lot. I know my audience is going to learn a lot from listening to this, and you did a fantastic job explaining, some really complicated things, very, very easy to do. So I really appreciate you taking the time. And for everybody that's listening, we're going to throw up some links at the end of this or at the bottom of this post that you can go to. We'll check out the Running Times article that Mark referenced, and then some of the exercises as well as the transition plans that he mentioned that are available on his site. You can check out his store if you're anywhere in the West Virginia area. And again, Mark, thanks for taking the time.
Jeff, thank you. And I've really enjoyed following your site and your almost daily posts. It's really good stuff. And you're doing your homework and attaching to people that are, digging into the research and coaching, so when you connect the lab and the athlete and the coach, I think we're all moving forward.
Well, appreciate it. It's fun to do. So I enjoy it.
Right on. We'll have a good night.
Thanks, Mark. You too.